Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Weights, Wellness, and Witchery podcast. I'm your host, Grace Elizabeth. It has been quite some time since I've come out with a new episode, and so I'm super excited to be back. I have a great interview for you guys today. But before we get into that, I just want to say that this episode does mention a few topics that might be triggering or might just be something you don't want to hear. So there is mention of abuse involving children, sexual abuse, and domestic violence. I have attached some resources in the show notes here if you or someone you love is struggling with any of these issues or is a victim of domestic violence. Please go to the show notes and there are some resources there for you. That being said, this is going to be an incredible conversation with Ty, who has actually been on the podcast before, back in one of the few first episodes I put out, where she was talking about her top five mindfulness tips. And today she's back to share with us an incredible story of how she communicated with her grandfather from beyond the grave, and through that was able to forgive him and heal generational trauma in her family. It's truly an amazing story. You're going to want to stick around for the whole thing. Ty, the way that she tells the story is just so incredibly moving. I'm very excited to have her. I'm very excited to be back. And when I get together with Ty, we tend to cover a lot of topics, I think. Before editing the episode, I think the entire recording of our conversation was like 2.5 hours long. So I did actually split this episode up into two pieces, where the first episode is just going to be Ty telling her story involving how she communicated with her grandfather after his death. And it's just such a good story. I wanted to leave that alone as its own episode. And then once that's finished, there is actually a part two where Ty and I go into having a lot more of a conversational interview where we're talking about things like experiencing other people's memories, physical and energetic healing, and some other interesting paranormal topics as well. So you're going to notice the end of this episode, it ends a little abruptly, but the conversation is continued in part two, so you can continue it there as well. Again, I'm so happy to have you guys. I'm so glad to be back, and just stick around for this amazing story.
So glad to be back, and just stick around for this amazing story.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Weights, Wellness, and Witchery podcast. I'm your host, Grace Elizabeth. It has been at least 6 months since I've recorded an episode for this podcast, so I apologize if I'm a little rusty. But I'm coming back with a bang because I have a super awesome guest for you guys today. You know and love her. She's been here before. It is my very special guest and friend, Ty. And welcome, Ty. How are you doing?
Hi, thanks. I'm good.
Last time you were here, we talked about, I think it was mindset stuff, right? We were doing a wellness episode. Yeah, we were going over your mindfulness tips, which were awesome and helpful, and I hope everyone listened to that episode and took something away from it, because I know that I did. But today, we're coming in, we're switching gears, and we're going to go a little bit into the witchery realm of things. Ty, what are we talking about today? Why are you back here on the podcast?
Well, I appreciate that you brought up the reason that we were here last time with the mental health and the mindfulness stuff, because I truly do believe that like part of my passion that led me into like my mindfulness field was actually because I do, like, I experience a lot of out of this world kind of stuff. And I know that like in some of my darkest moments, oddly enough, it was almost like people that weren't alive anymore were the people that were my rocks. And I do have this phenomenal, I would call it an ability to communicate with and experience spirits that are no longer present. So today we're going to talk a little bit about some of my super cool stories. And hopefully, you know, your listeners find it as interesting as I find it. I really do. I have a pretty awesome experience with my grandfather, who has since passed away. And while I was working through my mindfulness projects, That was actually at the peak moments with my grandfather. And I felt like a lot of his sort of signals to me were what kept me safe and kept me grounded and kept me in a position where I could make rational decisions. So yeah, that's kind of what we're going to chit chat about today.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. I'm super, super interested to dive into that story. You reached out to me on Instagram and we were talking about it a little bit over Instagram. So I am fascinated and ready to hear the deep dive, the full story, all of the ways in which you have communicated with your grandfather. So I guess let's start start from the beginning. Tell us when he was alive, did you have a relationship with him? When did he pass? And then when did you start to communicate with him?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So I would say when my grandfather was alive, no, I did not. I mean, I was forced to have a relationship with him because he's, you know, a family member. But really, as a child, I didn't trust him. There was a lot of stuff that was going on with him that even as a young girl made me uncomfortable, made me, you know, always attached to my grandmother more. My mom would drop me off for visits with them over the summer. And I found that a lot of my relationship with, you know, say my grandparents was heavily on my grandmother's side just because there was always this, I would call it an energy that pushed me away from him. He was not... When he was alive, he was not a good person. There were a lot of things that he did to my mother. Mm. And as I grew up, I learned that he had done them to me. And I believe personally, after he passed away, speaking with some of my other family members, I believe he did it to people that were not in our family. And then after, I'll get into this later in the story as well, but after he passed away, I found out as well that he was doing it to my cousin, and he was heavily abusive toward my grandmother. So when he passed away, I was about 9 months pregnant with my first son. And it was one of the very first times that the entire family had gotten together to sort of like, you know, it wasn't a funeral, but we got together to sort of remember who he was. And I had so much anger toward him because when he did pass away, it was a heart attack. And he was angry at his neighbor and yelled, and his heart finally kicked the bucket, and he had passed away in my grandmother's arms. And it was a very devastating experience. And I don't think that we were there necessarily for him. I think we were there for her. But as we're at this tea luncheon, there were people from all over the place that had come to sort of celebrate what he had done in his life. And like I said, be there for my grandmother. And people kept coming up to me and saying, "I'm so sorry for your loss." And that stuck with me because I didn't understand why they were sorry for my loss. I didn't feel like I had lost anything. I felt, if anything, that the world had been rid of a horrible person. And because of that, I never cried. I never held any deep mourning. I just didn't give a shit, really. And surprisingly enough, throughout what I remember in my life, my mom wasn't close to him either. He was just gone. Out of nowhere, he was just gone. It was just a chapter in our life that, you know, had passed, and I continued living my life like it had not affected me whatsoever. I did notice, however, after he passed away, that my mom started to miss him. And out of nowhere has these, "I miss you, Dad. I love you, Dad." She was very emotional about it. And I'm assuming that comes with, regardless of what a person does, the loss of a parent. But it was something that I had racked my brain around a lot. So I remember stories at the funeral. I wasn't present for this, but I remember stories at the funeral that my cousin and my Oma, my grandparents are of German descent. So my his wife, my Oma, and my cousin and my aunt were in a car. And they were sitting out in front of the lodge that we were having the lunch in, and a white moth, we call it a butterfly, but a white moth had flown in through the window and rested on the gear shift. And everybody looked at this because it was so out of the norm, right? And then the butterfly just sat there, And it sat there long enough for each one of them to make a comment. My cousin had taken a photo. And of course, you know, they made the connection that, oh, this must be Opa. He's coming to let us know that he's okay and we're going to be okay and everything is okay. So from that day moving forward, anytime any of us saw a white butterfly, we just recognized that as Opa. Years down the road, life has its ups and downs, and I, you know, had moved and had kids and got married, and unfortunately in my marriage there was a massive breakdown and significant abuse. It started emotionally, it was physical for a long time, and I finally, during the pandemic, actually the beginning of the pandemic, I finally had the ability and the courage to separate from my husband. Now, this is about a 5-6 year gap. And I mention this because that entire time I didn't give a fuck. Like it never crossed my mind that my grandfather was even relevant in my life. I truly hated him for what he had done to me, for what I thought I remembered him doing, for the stories that my mom had told me. Like it never bothered me. In fact, it angered me that my mom would make such an emotional display of his death, because I was like, fuck this guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he was not a good person. Now, my separation plays into this because it was very spontaneous. I would say very almost impulsive. I was able to use the pandemic as an excuse to leave my husband, because at the time he was working on an oil site where there was tens of thousands of people. And I was like, oh, you know, you could bring home COVID. So the kids and I are going to leave and stay with my dad. And we live in Alberta. So for those of you who don't know much about Alberta, it's got everything. It's got plains and prairies and mountains and muskeg and big cities. I lived in the farthest northern part of our province, where it's very heavy oil field industry and boreal forest, very beautiful. But unfortunately, I had to leave. Now, in that area, it's super expensive. So on a $900 budget as a single mom with two kids, I didn't have many options but to find somewhere in the fucking boonies. And we ended up in a community actually really, really, really close to where my grandma and my grandfather lived throughout my life. And it was fields, farms, cows, ghost houses. It was amazing. It was an incredible experience. But it wasn't planned. It was just the only place that I could afford. And I never understood, I never thought that there would be significance as to why I ended up where I ended up. But when I moved there, the sage and the smell and the sun and the sky, it always reminded me of my grandfather. And I started to get this feeling of like, holy shit, I miss him. Like, why do I miss him? And I started doing some research into who he was. He was adopted at birth into a very abusive family. He had a twin. But the more that I looked into him, the more that I saw me. You know, we look so similar and we behave so similar. And, you know, the good parts of us, you know, and I found some really cool old photos of him actually from when he was a young boy. And the glasses that I have are the exact same glasses that he wore as a little kid. Right? It's so crazy. And I had never noticed it before. And sure enough, I just was looking through a photo and I was like, oh, my God, that's like he literally is me. So out there on the farm, I had done an entire revamp of myself. I went from being very codependent and stress oriented to, you know, like that typical cute story of a single mom on a farm doing her best and raising her
kids.
You
were adorable on that farm, I must say.
Thank you. It was probably one of my favorite chapters of life, truly. And I started wondering, like, if I had been, because keep in mind, my marriage was abusive, but it wasn't just on my husband's side of things. Like I was definitely part of that. And so I started reflecting on if I was that bad of a person, and yet there's still so much good in me, is there a chance that my grandfather was also a good person? Because, you know, I'm trying to find reason for why I started missing him and longing for him.
Right.
Now, about a month into living in my home, my community was essentially a ghost town. There was about 10 families that lived there. 98% of the buildings were abandoned farm homes, and it was cool as fuck. Like, there were ghosts everywhere. They would just show their presence in spirit, I find. And although I feel that, and I very much do feel the energy when they're around, my baby, he would have been 2.5, 3 at the time, really picks up on that shit, as I'm sure most people who are experienced with this world might understand. Kids just have that gift. Now, we always want to be like, is it a ghost, or are you just being weird, right? Like, what are you looking at in the corner, dude?
Yeah, toddlers are freaky like that sometimes.
They're fucking scary. They're like, who are you chatting with? So I remember at one point we're going up the stairs. My home was very interesting. The basement was still the original farm home, but the top had been demolished and a new home had been built on top. So the basement was original. And as we had come upstairs from the basement, we had this weird little, and I mean, Grace, like, weird little, like, square storage space.
Oh, a crawl space? Really, oh, hell no.
Yeah, it was creepy. It was in the basement. It scared the fuck. It was always like this raging negative energy.
No,
like, it was
you.
Just I was just trying to like zip past that. So my youngest son, he stops us on the stairs and he points directly into the hole, which, red flag. And he goes, "Mama," I'm like, "Yeah, my dude." He goes, "Oma used to sleep in there with nothing but a pillow." And I'm like, "That's fucking wild." Like, how, right? And it was one of those I'm like, okay,
what do I
honey.
Do with that information?
Precisely. So so I'm like, okay, you know, like, let's go do our shit. We continued our day. I called my mom later that evening. It was one of those comments that just stuck with me. And so I asked my mom, because my grandma's alive, right? So I'm like, you know, I'm like, it can't be a ghost thing. And so I asked my mom, and she goes, "Can you explain what this dark hole looked like?" Now, Grace, red flag. Mom, why do you want to know? And I explained the hole to her, and I'm like, "It's dark. It's kind of damp. It's a wooden floor, and, you know, like, it's just spooky." And she goes, "Holy shit. So my Oma used to tell my Opa stories when he was alive of when she escaped from the war in Germany. And she was a little girl, and their house kept getting blown up. Everywhere they moved, their home would be bombed, and they lived in essentially a chuck wagon. And they would go from, like, barn to barn, and my Oma, as a little girl, would sleep on a barn floor in a dark crawl space with nothing but a pillow."
Oh, my goodness.
And I was like, okay, holy shit. Like, this, I had felt that my grandfather was making a presence, like my Opa. I felt like he was around. I felt like there was a reason as to why he was becoming more present in my daily life. But that was fucking significant, because I couldn't write it off.
Oh, yeah. That's wild. That story, like, that small story alone is like, oh, holy shit. So I can't imagine where this is going to go. So keep going. Sorry.
So we lived, like I said, in a pretty isolated area. My backyard backed onto a wheat field. And so, I mean, it was one of those classic OG, like, 90s. My kids would just be out riding their bikes. I'm, you know, probably somewhere in the house making coffee, listening to, you know, some cute old country song in a sundress. And every time my youngest son would see a white butterfly floating around in the field, which was obviously a lot living on a farm, he'd run inside the house and be like, "Mama, a butterfly. And he'd drag my ass out there, and I'd look at the butterfly, and he would look up and say, "Opa." And I mean, that's trained in him, right? Like, like I said, my family sees that. We recognize it as Opa. And so I continued saying that to him. Now, the difference for me was that I was starting to feel peace. I used to feel anger and resentment, like, fuck that butterfly. But now I just would feel calm. And I'm noticing these physical reactions in my body. And so I start diving farther into this conversation with my son. And every time He recognizes my Opa being around. You know, I ask him if he sees him or if he can talk to him. And I mean, he's a 3.5-year-old child. Like, he's not really giving me much information. Right. But again, it was this energy level. I felt safe. As I started diving deeper into his history and who he was and our life, I knew that it was time to reach out to my family, my cousins, my Oma, my auntie, and ask the blazing question, did he assault you as well? And my farm was about 5 hours from where my grandmother lived, and I made a drive out there one day. Now, in between where she lives currently and where I was living was the farm that my grandma, my grandpa, and my aunt, my uncles, and my mom all lived on for many, many, many years. And I drove past it several times in my life, and I had no inclination of going to look. Now, on this trip out to see my grandmother, I had, yeah, that itch to be like, I wonder what it looks like. I wonder what it's like now. I wonder if I go there, am I going to feel different? Am I like, what the fuck am I looking for? Right. Like, what is this? I go and I have the conversation with my Oma. She was pretty open and honest about how he was not always the best man, but she took the opportunity to shed light on the fact that there were a lot of good things about him, and that's what she loved about him. But she stayed because it was that generation. Right, right. You know, she's old as fuck. She moved in from Germany. She spoke no English. Basically, once she met him, she just felt it was her obligation to stay through everything that he did. And she did. And then everybody went to bed, and my cousin and I sat up late at night on the couch drinking wine. And I finally approached the question with her, and she just stopped and she stared at me and she goes, you know, Ty, I always thought that that had happened to me, but I wasn't sure if I was living someone else's memory. Now, that's a significant sentence because that happens to me a lot as well. I'll have relationships with people, close relationships, and then I'll have memories and feelings almost like it's deja vu, and it's their memory. Right. And when I had spoken with my mother about this, you know, did this happen to me? Was this a real thing? I don't know if it is, because I knew it happened to my mom, and I was always curious if it was her memory that I was living through. And having that conversation with my cousin where she thought the same thing, I'm like, okay, but we have a common denominator here. This man assaulted someone in our family, and either it was all of us or we're all just living each other's memories. That feeling couldn't go away. I needed to get to the bottom of who he was and why the fuck he was lingering. Now, I don't know if there's any validity to this. The world of ghosts and spirits and energies, I mean, it's not a solid science. So whether or not this is true, it's how I felt. But because my grandfather was such an evil person in his life, I just assumed that he was trapped. And I felt like he wouldn't be able to move on unless he had made amends or reparation to the people that he hurt in his life. And I believe that I was the only one left in the family that held resentment toward him. And I think that's why he lingered with me the most. I went home, and, you know, this was a time in my life where I was seeing 444 all the time. And when I looked that up, I was like, oh, you know, somebody from another realm is trying to talk to you.
Like can we pause real quick just in case that anyone's listening? Can you explain a little bit about the 444 and the numbers and just significance in general around that? Just a little sidebar. Yeah. I know you're super into that, and I love hearing about it. So just in case listeners don't know, can you just elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So commonly, I believe that the universe tries to speak with us in gentle ways, whether it's, you know, significant smells that bring up a memory or seeing numbers, for example. And so sometimes you'll look at the clock and you'll see 111 and it'll give you that little like burst of energy, like, oh shit, cool. But there is significance to it. And for 444, it is commonly referred to as the number that spirits are trying to communicate with you. And it was predominant when I moved to the farm almost the whole year, Grace. I was seeing that almost every single day in different ways, whether it was on the clock, the odometer, a sign, someone's license plate. You know, I would go pay at a cash register. I would see 444. I really do believe because there was such heightened energy in that area that that was the universe really trying to push me into pursuing this conversation with my grandfather. Mm-hmm. I said, everything about that area was significant relevance to who we were as a family when he was alive. It was, I didn't even mean this, Grace, but I'm not kidding you. It was like 25 fucking minutes from where I was raised at my grandparents' house.
That's
like,
wild.
I just picked a farm. It is. It was so, and he's buried there as well.
Wow.
So it was so, so close. And it was the first time that I would actually go and see his grave. I didn't even know the first few times what I was going to do there. I screamed, you know, I was like, fuck you, man. Like, what do you want? But the 444 came up all of the time. And the more that I looked into it, the more I felt pursued, toward like studying this part of me. Like, I always knew that there was some weird shit happening with spirits. Like, I can feel them. I can almost hear them. I know that there is some kind of a deep connection with me. So I'm like, okay, 444, I'm going to go check this out. Now, like I said, I visited his grave. And for the first few times I did, I just screamed. I cried. I screamed. I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what he wanted, but it was starting to get so intense and so real in my life that he was trying to communicate with me that I sort of just let it happen. Mm-hmm. Now, like I said, I was leaving a pretty fucking bad marriage, and it was not good. After I left, it was almost worse. I guess it's that feeling of loss, and he was really clinging on to the final strings of getting that back. Now, I'd like to mention before I go into some of the scarier parts of it, we are great now. It took a long time for us to figure out how to co-parent, but we're, you know, back to being best friends, and he is an amazing man. I think he just was really struggling with a lot of mental health and a lot of loss and didn't handle it well. So he found out where we lived and was very manipulative in trying to sustain a relationship with me and the boys. And I, of course, fell in and I let him come over to see the kids. And I agreed, you know, you can spend the night, you can stay in their room, I'll go to the city for the day and, you know, give me a break. I was fucking homeschooling, full-time, stay at home, middle of nowhere, mom with two kids, like,
yeah,
please give me a break.
You need
right?
a break. You do need a break.
3 hours, like anything. Fuck, I just need to breathe. So he had come down from where we were living before, and he shows up, and you know, we had a good evening with the kids, and we're getting into a card game at the kitchen table, and just kind of going back into the numbers thing again. This is not what 911 means. 911 usually reflects on like increasing your ability and your skills in a spiritual sense. I, however, have encountered 911 and then like been pulled over or been in a really dangerous situation. And so it's taken a lot for me to sort of switch my mindset about mm-hmm. what it means. But I saw that and immediately had panic. I looked at my clock and I saw 9/11 while my ex-husband and I were sitting at the table playing mm-hmm. cards, and I panicked. And immediately I'm like, oh my God, does this mean I'm going to cave and he's going to move back in and I'm not going to get,
right,
you know what I mean?
Right,
like, is
yeah.
this whole. So I approached the conversation with, hey, like, I'm having a really good time. Thank you for coming. But I think it's time that we tuck into bed. I was like, I'll show you to the kids' room and, you know, we'll pick this back up in the morning. But that didn't go over well with him. And it immediately went bad. It was bad. And I was scared, but I felt this pat on the top of my head. I was sitting at the kitchen table and I felt this like little pat pat on the top of my head. And I'm like, bitch, what? Turned around and obviously nothing is there, but I felt calm. And I remember being a little girl at my grandparents' house, and my opa would always pat my head twice like that. I was about 5 or 6 years old. And I was like, oh my God, like he's actually here right now. Like he is okay. And just having that extra presence there. I mean, Grace, I'm easily 40 minutes from the closest police
right.
station. And I had nobody to fucking save me out there. And I just felt safe. When he had pat my head like that. It was a long night and I eventually got him out. And I, you know, weeks went by. And of course I did the same thing that a lot of women do and I let him back mm-hmm. in. And this time I was like, I'm going to do it right. You know, I was like, daytime.
Like, that's a good start. That is a good start.
Right? I'm like, let's start there. And so he had come. I was like, you can come over, be here for 6 a.m. You know, you can get the kids ready for breakfast, whatever. We'll have a day of playing in the yard. And then I'll go and I'll spend the night in Edmonton. You can spend the night here. And then I figured if I removed myself from the situation for evenings that, you know, it would be a better situation. Right. But my son, it was about 7:30 in the morning. My son was out in the back field. And I was with him drinking my coffee, watching the sun come up, and he points out to the white butterfly. Mm. And this was the most intense I had ever felt, my Opa's presence with this white butterfly. And it was one of those moments that was so significant. I'm like, I really got to hang on to this. Mm. Like, what does this mean? I was like, don't worry, it's just Opa. But it wasn't just fluttering by, it was hovering around us. And I go into the house, my husband at the time, he was sitting with my oldest son. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to get ready to get going. Like, I'm going to start packing to head to the city. And he didn't like that. And I'm like, for fuck's sakes, man, like this, you're not helping yourself. If we're going to get past this, like, you have to let me leave. And then, Grace, the butterfly was at the front window, just as all of this is going on. And it sits on my thermometer and it's just sitting there. And I can see it and I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And it's escalating. The situation is getting completely out of my control. And I had to put the kids in their room to play with their games so I could try and remove their dad from the home. Now, a long time ago, ladies, please never do this. I made a promise to my husband back when we first met. I was like, ride or die, baby. No matter what happens, I will never leave you. I will never call the police on you, like nothing, right? And unfortunately, I held that really tight to my chest, and it's what got me hurt a lot, physically, emotionally. And I just, for some reason, clung to that, I'm never going to call the police on you. And he knew that. So as the situation is getting worse and more violent, the butterfly continues fluttering around my kitchen window. And I'm feeling this sense of fear and this feeling of protection still somehow. You know, it was almost like he was trying to be like, I'm here if you need me, you're safe, you're okay, but don't put up with this shit, but you're okay. I managed to get my ex out of the house, but then, he didn't leave. He was trying to break in. He was banging doors. He was trying to smash windows. At one point, I had myself propped up by the wall and my feet were against the door and he was busting through the door frame. Wow. And I was so fucking scared. I knew, I was like, this is it. Like, I don't know what to do. I'm so scared. And I felt him leave the door and I'm like, oh fuck, he's going to run around the house. He's going to go to the front door. So I book it to the front door so I could sit at that door, and I'm crying and I'm like, this is awful. Like, I don't know what to do. And then as I get to the front door, the patio door didn't have the lock on it. God. And the fucking butterfly, Grace, the fucking butterfly is at the window and it lands on the door handle. And it made me look at the door handle, which made me realize the lock wasn't locked. I was like, holy fuck, this is really happening. So I lock the lock, I get to the front door, I'm blocking it. And same thing. He's trying to get in, he's trying to kick it in, he's trying to kick it in. And all of a sudden then there's dead silence. And I feel safe enough to get up and look, and he peels away. He peels away, rips his car down the road, and he's gone. And I'm sitting in the kitchen on the floor. My head is in my hands and I'm sobbing. I'm fucking sobbing. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. I'm scared. I'm alone. I can't do this on my own. Like, we're gonna fucking die. Like, I don't know what to do. And then I felt the pat pat on the top of my head, and inside my soul, there was just this stillness. It's okay to call the police. It's time now. And so I called the police, and for the first time, I felt safe, and they had arrested him on the highway. And I thought that we were going to be okay for a little while. Now, going into the end of the day, I'm cleaning the house, packing up the toys, and I'm putting things away, and I'm getting the kids ready for bed, and Cora is in his room. My oldest is in his room. And my littlest comes like, pat, 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 running down the hallway. And I would always be like, is it a ghost? Is it a good one or a bad one? And he would either like nod or shake his head or whatever. And he just, Grace deadass, stands in front of me and stares me in the face. And I'm like, oh, okay, good feeling's gone. Like, is it not a good ghost? Like, what? It was a joke, man. Yeah. Like, I'm tapped today. Like, I am at patient's capacity. And then he gets this creepy little fucking smile. God damn, I love that kid. He gets this creepy little smile and he looks at the rocking chair, and the fucking rocking chair was rocking. Wow. And it was like a half a foot from me.
Oh my God.
And he points at the chair and I look at him and I go, is it Opa? And he just nods his head and he runs to his bedroom to get ready for bed. And I sat in the living room with my grandfather. And as I go to turn my head back, I was putting VCR, like VHSs back up on the shelf because kids. As I was putting them back up on the shelf, this VHS like flew off the shelf at me. And it took me a second to process that I couldn't have done that. Like, I thought maybe I bumped it, but it fucking flew at me. And I was like, no, like I did not do that. And I pick up the movie and I look at it, and I don't know if you remember this, but it was called Sticking Around. It was this hilarious, like, sketch cartoon, ridiculous TV series, essentially. But it's the movie that I used to play on repeat every single summer when I was with my grandpa.
Wow.
And I just sat there crying. I'm like, oh my God, like, he saved me. This is it. You know, I feel okay. And all of a sudden, like, what he had done didn't go away, but it was almost like one of those heroic moves where he's like, okay, now listen to me. Like, I'm trying to do better. I'm trying to be a better person. I'm trying to show you that I'm here for you because I wasn't here for you in life. And now I've got this attachment to him, this, like, I want to know who you are. I want to understand you. And I started digging deeper. You know, I wanted to know who his real family was, not just his adoptive family. Right. I wanted to know he's of Native descent. I wanted to know which tribe he belonged to and which area he came from, because he had a really unfair life. You know, he grew up in a very abusive home with a mother who adopted him but didn't love her children. She was hard and cold and crass and racist, mm-hmm. and so was he. And all of those reasons, alongside the abuse, were reasons that I didn't love mm-hmm. him. And so I thought, if I have the opportunity to look into my heritage, look into the women in my life and my bloodline and my grandfather, maybe I'll have a better understanding of this man. And as time went on, I continued to fall deeper in love with my grandfather. Like, I felt, over this experience on the farm, I mean, there were so many of them, these little moments where I felt him nearby. I would feel tingling, or I'd feel the room chill, or I'd feel, you know, warm or fuzzy or safe, or I'd think of a story that I haven't thought of in forever, or my crazy ass toddler would tell me some funky shit. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I remember that, you know? So, so I was taking my kids back to my grandmother to go visit. And like I said earlier, the farm that they raised my mother on was about the halfway mark. So I dropped my kids off, and on the way back, I knew I had mm-hmm. to stop. It was so powerful and intense inside me. Like, it wasn't even my decision. I was basically being guided. Now, Grace, we have not lived there since I was probably a 5-year-old girl. Like, out on that farm, it was... they sold it, you know, they had moved into this town that was close to where my farm was. But I mean, I hadn't been there since I was a little girl, and I drove there as if it was a daily trip. Like, I just knew every turn. I knew every direction. The intense feeling of, like, I don't know if it was anxiety, but it was definitely powerful inside me. I could feel it, like, pulsing mm-hmm. as I was driving. And, as I was getting closer to the farm, so the sky was fully covered in clouds. It was this super, super gray day. And there's train tracks. And once you got to the train tracks, when you look behind you, the entire sky, as far as you can possibly see, is covered in this dense, gray, thick cloud. But in front of me, where the farm was bright blue sky. I turned the corner, I pulled up to the farm, and I could feel him, like, with me. Like, I could literally feel the entire, from the morning that I was driving out there to drop them off, from the moment that I woke up, he was like, you know, like, so excited. He's like, let's go. Like, we're doing this. We're going to go. I'm going to show you. I'm going to take you there. Like, this is, he's like, I need to show you this. So I'm pulling up to the farm and I get there. And I mean, this has been, you know, a good, you know, what is this? 25 years. Like, let's not age myself here, but it's been a long time. And I go up and of course there's new buildings and there's things moved around, but there is the original homestead still standing there. Now it was boarded up. The doors were locked, but fuck turning around and leaving. Like, it wasn't happening. And I managed to get one of the locks off the door, but I couldn't get the other one off. And so I walked around to the front of the old farm home, and there was a huge piece of plywood leaning against the house. And I was like, oh my God, I'm like, I think that's the patio door. So I pulled the plywood off and the fucking patio door was unlatched. And I was like, okay, I'm going in. When you look inside the house as like just a regular ass person, it's full of storage stuff. Whoever had bought the farm was using it to like hold their shit. There was exercise equipment and books, and there was actually a super cool trunk with an old wedding dress. Like, it was very cool to be in and just experience kind of their life in that home. But I didn't see that. When I walked in and my foot hit the floor in that building, I was like 5-6 years old. It was Christmas. It was warm. It was beautiful. I could smell my oma's cooking. I could hear my family laughing. I could see the furniture that was there. It's dead ass cold as fuck February in the farm. Like, it is not that whatsoever. And it was, you know, the roof was caving in and there was water leaking everywhere, and it was cold as shit. So how I felt so warm, it was definitely, it was significant to me. Like, I needed to remember that moment specifically.
Wow.
As I'm looking around the house, there's a living room, a kitchen, a dining room, an off room, a bathroom, and two bedrooms. I went through all of the rooms and I just tinkered around. There was nothing significant whatsoever. And then I walked to the back bedroom, the only room that had the roof caving in, and not a thing was in that room but a box in the corner. Everywhere else in the house was packed to the fucking ceiling with these people's shit, but this room specifically had nothing in it. Just one box in the corner. I stopped at the doorway and I looked inside. It's pitch black. And there's just a little bit of light sort of coming in from where the ceiling had been caving in. And I felt him push my shoulder. Oh, I'm going to cry. I stepped into the room and all of a sudden there was a bed and red bedding. There was, you know, old wood on the walls and a lamp and a side table. And I was no longer looking at this scene as if I was there. I was looking above it and I could see me as a little girl in the bed. And that's where they would put me to sleep. You know, most of us shared one room when we'd visit my grandmother's house. And I saw the door open and the light peeked in from the living room where the family was, and my grandfather slipped through the crack and he closed the door behind him and he crawled up onto the bed with me. And then I checked back into reality, and all of a sudden I'm standing alone in the middle of this empty room, freezing, dark, with nothing but a box in the corner. And I knew that that was him telling me, I did it, and I'm sorry, and I can never take it back, and it was wrong, but I needed you to know that you weren't crazy, that you weren't imagining it, that it wasn't someone else's memory, it was yours, and I'm sorry. And it took me a few minutes to sort of shake that feeling off. And then I directed myself to the box in the corner. Now, this whole house is full of their shit, Grace. This family that bought our farm home. But I opened up the box and I dug through it. There was some clothes and some hats. And at the bottom of the box, there was a stuffed Tigger teddy. And it said Ty on the foot. And I knew before I even looked at my name on that stuffed animal that it was mine, because I remembered it. It was one of my favorite toys ever. And we had left it at the farm that Christmas, but I didn't understand as a little girl why we never went back. Nobody ever told me why we were never back. I guess I know now. So I grabbed the stuffy and I walked back into the main room and I just kept snooping around because I'm like, this place is cool as shit. It's like, I want to like look through all their cool stuff. And I get into the kitchen and then all of a sudden he's gone. He's with me that whole fucking time. The whole day he's like jumping on my shoulder, like, woo, like, let's do this. I got to show you something. I got to bring you somewhere. And then it's radio silence. There's nothing. And I'm like, what in the fuck? Okay. And all of a sudden I get this kind of urge to be like, maybe that's his cue to be like, you saw what you needed to see. It's time to go. And so I'm like, all right. And I'm getting, you know, the stuffy and I grabbed my jacket. And as I'm crawling out the front patio door and putting the plywood back up against the side of the house, a truck pulls up onto the road. And I'm like, oh shit, that's the owner. Like, I'm like, I better, you know, come up with some story as to why I just broke into their fucking house. Like, you know, even though they're not living there, it is still theirs. And I walk up to the guy and I just put my hand out and I shake his hand and I say, hi, like, my name is Tyann. And I'm sorry, I broke the plywood. You know, I grew up here. I just wanted to see the old home. Nobody was here. You know, if you need anything, here's my number. I'm so sorry. If you have anything that you find that you want to give to me, or if you don't mind my mom coming and visiting the farm sometime, like, please just get a hold of me. And I don't know if he was like surprised that of my blatant honesty, or if he was just like a cool guy that wasn't going to call the cops on me for literally breaking into his farm home. But he let me go. So I'm driving home and I am on track. I'm making good time. I stop in a small town for some dinner, and on my way past, the home that they, you know, raised me in, that's just a couple minutes from my farm, I just knew that it was time to go and stop at the grave. So I pull into town and I kid you not, I drive up to his gravesite and the clock is 4:44.
Oh my goodness.
And I just sat there with peace. And I knew that from that moment moving forward, that everything was going to be okay. Grace, he's never come back. Not once. That whole day, that whole experience, the significance of the numbers, the energy, the feeling that I had with him, it never came back once. And I don't know if that was what he needed to do to be able to pass on, or if maybe he's visiting somebody else right now, but he made amends with me. And I don't hold any anger or resentment toward him anymore, because I know I'm not crazy. I know what happened was real. And I know that he's sorry for it.
Wow, Ty, that whole story is such an incredible story.
So that's my story.
That was one. You're like, you are a beautiful storyteller, and I hope you're writing a book or something. We can talk about that later. But just the way that you describe everything, and you really like, I was like there with you through all of that. So that was, thank you for sharing too, because that was an incredibly vulnerable story. While you're telling me the story, I'm thinking about, and I'm sure you've thought about this as well, just all the different levels of like generational healing that's happening here, right?
Yes. Oh, that, you know, and with you saying that, that's something that I found, you know, this itch to like look into who I was, like where he came from and why he was the way that he was, all of that. It truly was, it felt like generational healing. Like, it felt like one of those moments where I was able to approach a very toxic and scary conversation with my family members to be like, let's get this straight. Let's figure out exactly what was happening so that we know how to move forward in a healthy manner. Now, I knew that there was some deep-seated trauma in me, trauma responses, because of what I had been through. And it was one of the significant reasons that led me into the type of life that I had. I know that was very similar with my mom as well, to be very, you know, let's say like boyfriend to boyfriend to boyfriend, always needing approval, always looking for something, even if it isn't right, in a healthy situation. I really did feel like that led to so much more closure than just like, okay, so, you know, it really did happen. Right. Cool. Like, I was able to heal from that, and moving forward, you know, I do not take shit anymore. As a person, like as an individual person, if I'm meeting somebody else, fuck no. You treat me with respect, and I display the same behaviors for my kids. Like, we talk significantly about, you know, consent, for example. If they want to give somebody a hug or a kiss, like, hey, you good, bro? Like, can I give you a hug? Those little forms of conversation and consent, I think in the long run, are really going to help my kids understand, like, healthy boundaries and healthy settings. And not only do I feel like there was a wave of relief that my, let's call them ancestors, but that my ancestors felt when I finally had this revelation, but moving forward on my bloodline, like, it's not gonna fucking happen. It's not gonna fly.
Yeah, that's like, because when you think about it, and you were saying kind of towards the end of your story, like, you know, I didn't know if that was what he needed for him to move on, or if, you know, now he's somewhere and he's with somebody else working through something else. But if you, like, it's like it was for him, but it was also for you, because you needed that too. And
yeah,
also for your cousin, right? And also for your mom and your grandma. And yeah, even thinking about, you know, you just taking the time to look into the cycle of where your grandpa came from and how he was raised and how, you know, that contributed to the relationships that you were in, and having that, like, first of all, being open enough to, as much as you did hate him, or have that anger towards him, and want nothing to do with him, the fact that you were even able to open up enough to, you know, to communicate with him, to let him into your life, to take you through that whole process of getting the confirmation, of doing the healing, if for nobody else but yourself and your kids, was, you know, that's significant that you were even able to do that. Yeah, and I think that that's one of those things where it's hard, especially if you have, you know, someone who's done something like that to you, family member, family friend, whoever it might be. Like, it's not something you want to forgive people for. And I'm, you know, it's definitely like an individual thing. And I think that the most, like, one of the coolest parts of your story, or a significant part of your story, is that honestly, you don't even have to forgive them, right? You just went through the process of getting that confirmation that yes, it did happen. And, you know, for you to be able to say, okay, like, I know why I've been this way, or I've gone through this cycle and I've done these things, but now that I know, now that I can heal that in myself, like, I'm not going to let that go any further, despite what happened before. So,
well, exactly. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's no longer anybody's responsibility, but my own, to recognize myself and what my boundaries are. And yeah, I think that it really did. You know, I kept in touch with my cousin, and my mother and my grandmother throughout this experience. And I think that one of the common things that they say to me about me is that I'm very brave. I am the bravest in the family, they say, of the women. You know, I'm the one that I'll go hiking in the middle of the woods with my dog and just go on, like, day adventures in the mountains. And I'm always, you know, I'm trying something new. I'm the one that, you know, dirt bikes and snowboards, and I'm always, like, risky and living on the edge. And I'm the one to call people out for their shit and be very analytical about it. And I'm the one to get down to the root of things. And I truly do believe that the fear that was set in them came from the fear that he gave them. And whether or not, you know, this ballsier side of me was a rebellion, you know, to kind of say, like, fuck you, I'm not going to be scared. Me overcoming it and having this very, honestly, Grace, it was as scary as it was a very beautiful moment for me, standing in that room and recognizing, like, seeing what just happened. I think that that wave of relief gave my family this freedom to no longer be as afraid. And, you know, it might not be significant, but, you know, my mom called me, let's say 6-7 months ago. And she was like, Ty, guess what? I booked a trip. I'm going somewhere by myself. And here she is, like, you know, flying to another country and doing her first solo trip. And, you know, my cousin is stepping out and getting a little bit crazy with her life. And she did a big career change, and she moved. She has recently been engaged and now is pregnant after trying for many, many, many years. So there are all these huge shifts that I've seen in my, actually my aunt as well left her abusive husband and is now in a healthy, strong relationship. Like, I mean, I do not take credit for any of their amazing endeavors that they've put themselves on, but I definitely see this freedom and this bravery that they have gained since I have been through that experience with our grandfather, like with Opa. And I'm really proud of them.
That's incredible and so amazing for all of you. And congratulations to all of them as well. That's super awesome. I love hearing stories about people, especially women, just like stepping into their power and just saying, fuck it, I'm going to do what I want.
Mm-hmm.
So that's freaking mm-hmm. amazing.
Absolutely.
One thing I do want to talk about, because you had mentioned this a couple times throughout your story, experiencing other people's memories. So, you know, at the beginning of your story, you were talking about your cousin and, you know, when you first kind of brought that up with her and both of you kind of, you know, thinking, are these our own memories? Are we experiencing each other's memories? Is this your mother's memories? And then you had said before that that's something you'd experience. So I want to hear a little bit more about mm-hmm. that. How, like, had that happened before that moment? Was this something that, like, you've experienced throughout your life? Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples? What does it mean? I don't know. Let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah, for sure. So
and that brings us to the end of the first half of this episode. Wow, what an incredible story. Am I right, guys? Ty is amazing, and she has such incredible stories and such an incredible way of telling them. And honestly, it just is incredible for being vulnerable and open and wanting to share her story and willing to share her story with us here on this podcast. So let's all just take a moment to thank Ty. And if you would like to hear the second half of our conversation, where we start to talk about things like experiencing other people's memories and other really fun topics, dive right into the second half of this episode, which will be released shortly if it has not been already. All right. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful week.